Welcome to the Echo Podcast on the history of West Hempstead, sponsored by Creative Corner. In this edition, Adam Dichter interviews Yessi Azos, a community leader and author of the blog West Hempstead Now and Then.
So to start off, tell me a little bit of background about yourself, how long you're living here in our great town of West Hempstead, and how you became how you came to be so fascinated with the history of the town since its formation.
So I moved to West Hempstead in March of 2001. I had, at the time, been teaching in a yeshiva in Suffolk County, and we were looking for a somewhat sizable Jewish community that was within commuting distance to my work, and we settled on West Hempstead. You know, that was in 2001. Shortly thereafter, I got involved in the West Hempstead Civic Association. Still have an association with the what's now called the West Hempstead Community Support Association. Through that capacity, kind of evolved into taking over the editorship of the newsletter of the Civic Association, and when putting together the newsletter, thought it might be a good idea to include in the newsletter a feature on some historical tidbits of the neighborhood, and that's how I started doing some research on West Hempstead history and just grew from there.
So give us a little bit of a kind of a short version of the history of our town.
So West Hempstead was really tied into the development of the village of Hempstead. I mean, going way back. I'm only talking about, I guess there were Indians that, Native Americans who had lived here for a very, very long time. They talked about, discovering evidence of a Native American village a little bit south in where Malvern is now. Actually, Malvern High School is now built on what used to be a pond. In the 1950s, they actually drained the pond and built Malvern High School. And I think at the time, they found evidence of, Native American settlement somewhere over there. So European settlers that actually were initially settled in Stamford, Connecticut. And then they came over, crossed over Long Island Sound, and then settled in Hempstead Village. And at the time, basically, the area started becoming, settled by those initial settlers. I think important event that people point to in the history of West Hempstead is the fact that, George Washington, when he conducted his tour of Long Island, actually passed through West Hempstead my interest in the history, let's back up for a second. So, stayed on in a hotel in Hempstead Village. So at the time, Hempstead Turnpike was called the Hempstead Jamaica Plank Road, and George Washington. We can imagine that there were. I mean, we have photos of homes that that existed along the turnpike
went that through the road
and seen overnight and during the course of Hempstead, and he writes about his journey. But really, the history starts picking up in the 19th century, and I think with a lot of different villages and neighborhoods in Long Island, it starts really with the railroad. I mean, that's really when things start picking up.
The Long Island Railroad was, you know, incorporated in the, I believe, in the early 1830s. And the Long Island Railroad, you know, came through. Hempstead Village actually was not served by a railroad per se. The main line of the Long Island Railroad is currently now where, you know, where Mineola is, and it extends out, you know, to Long Island. And the Hempstead Village was, I think, a little bit upset at the fact that they were kind of overlooked, and they you know, their village was underserved by public transportation, and they had a kind of like a shuttle service between what was called Mineola didn't exist at the time, but, you know, it was Mineola, was called Hempstead Branch, and it was served by a you know, sort of, I guess what you call a shuttle service between the village of Hempstead and Hempstead Branch.
And what is the identity of Hempstead and West Hempstead in relation to the greater town of Hempstead?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So the greater town of Hempstead really, you know, dates back already to the 18th century. And the demarcation line of the greater town of Hempstead really was much larger. It included North Hempstead as well.
Right. It's today one of the largest towns in America, I understand.
It's the largest township in America, from right. what they say, yeah.
Right.
Actually, so after the, or kind of like in the, during the American Revolution, people who lived in the town of Hempstead, or, you know, what they called South Hempstead at the time, by and large, many of them were actually loyalists or Tories, what they say. The people who lived on the North Shore in North Hempstead weren't happy about that.
Loyalists to the British Empire.
Yes, yeah, they were loyalists of the British Empire, and as a result, the two townships split apart, and the boundary is approximately where old, or it actually is exactly where Old Country Road exists, and that's the border between North Hempstead and Hempstead. Actually, Hempstead Village, as we know it, did not incorporate as a village until the mid-1800s. So when we're talking about the original town of Hempstead, you're talking about a much larger township than what exists now. It split up into two, you know, shortly after the American Revolution, and Hempstead as a village didn't come into play until the mid-1800s.
So what is the oldest institution in town in terms of still existing from, you know, from years or maybe decades or even a century ago?
You're talking about West Hempstead proper?
In West Hempstead, and things that we might pass in our daily life, what's something that's really old that you found out about? I can't believe that's still here.
Yeah, so I tried to research a little while ago to try and find the oldest existing house in West Hempstead.
Right.
And I found a house actually that's still standing on Woodfield Road. And that house dates back to 1839.
Wow. Woodfield and where?
It's Woodfield. It's off of, I believe it's between, or it's off of Walton Avenue. So it's really a nondescript house. You look at it, you'd say, you know, they think it's pretty old, but, you know, you wouldn't imagine that it's the oldest house in West Hempstead. But it belonged to the Wright family. Wright was, you know, large landowner.
Not the airplane guys.
Not the airplane, no relation.
Right.
There was one, you know, I think the father of the family's name was William Wright, and he had some sons. And they each, you know, I guess they split up the farm on that property. And they owned, you know, a large property along Woodfield Road, on the east side of Woodfield Road.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there was the big parcel of land next to CVS that recently got sold. That was a very old historic property, right?
And it was pretty historic. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't find the actual date that original house was built. It was built after 1900, but that house was originally owned by I believe the original owner's name was Caballero. He was an Italian. Was a fruit merchant, and he then sold the house to a fellow named Theodore Gaeta, who was a restaurant owner and owned a chain of restaurants throughout Long Island. That family, the Gaeta family, actually owned the property for a very long while, into the 2000s.
Talk a little bit about the demographic changes in the neighborhood.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. Early on, the landowners in West Hempstead came in two forms. One was, you're talking about wealthy owners who kept, country estates. For example, in the presidential section was originally a 100-acre property owned by, a wealthy fruit merchant. His name was Aubrey G. Hutchison. And he actually built, he had children as well, and he built for his children a group of homes on the east side of Hempstead Avenue, two of which actually are still standing in one form or another. One is the China Connection business is located. That was a house that Aubrey G. Hutchison built for one of his children. And the second one was right next door, where Anche is located, and that's the part of that building, the front part of Anche, was actually an original house built by Aubrey G. Hutchison for one of his children. So that's one example of a landowner, like a wealthy merchant. Another example is this fellow named Samuel E. Johnson, after which Johnson's Lane is named. So he owned a country estate. Samuel Johnson was a Kings County judge and also a state legislator.
I always assumed it was President Johnson because it's in the presidential area, but I guess not.
No, yeah. So that street was named, I guess it was in the 1940s or so, but it was named after Samuel E. Johnson. He was another example of a, wealthy landowner. That kept a country estate. The other flavor are, farmers. You had, farmers who kept farms. They grew crops, that would be sent into New York City to be sold at the various, farmers markets, the Washington market down in Chelsea, so on and so forth. And those farmers, I guess originally were, from, either England or Ireland, but then, as you get, further into the 1800s, certainly past 1850 or 60, they're more likely German farmers, of German extraction. That's where the demographics started out. And then, initially, obviously, West Hempstead, for the most part, was, were immigrants. They were, white. Probably after World War II.
When did the Jewish community here begin to grow and flourish?
That's a really good question. So the first, let's back up for a second. So, there were Jews that started moving in, to Hempstead, before the turn of the century. You had a couple of important businesses in Hempstead. One was run by a fellow by the name of Lewis Cohen. There was another dentist. His name was Adolf Rosenthal, and they started organizing a group, maybe organized Jewish activity, starting in 1898. and try to get things off the ground. Things didn't really get off the ground until a few years later, 1910, maybe 1912, where Beth Israel Synagogue was established. And Beth Israel actually still exists in one form or another. It's a Reform synagogue now, and it still exists on Hilton Avenue in Hempstead. But at the time, they established that synagogue. And it was a pretty prominent Reform synagogue. In West Hempstead proper, the first synagogue to exist was a synagogue named the Nassau Community Temple, and that synagogue started meeting at the American Legion Hall in Lakeview on Woodfield Road I think it was right after World War II, maybe 1945 or 46, when they got things going. So then they purchased a property on Woodfield Road, which actually still exists. It's the it's the Quonset Hut. As you go, north of, on Woodfield Road towards the corner of Hempstead Avenue, so you'll notice that there's a little laundromat and then a Quonset Hut that's for rent now. That actually was the first synagogue in West Hempstead, and that was the property of, that was built by the Nassau Community Temple. They were, at that property for about 13 or 14 years. And they were going strong. I mean, they were really growing by leaps and bounds, to the point where they needed to expand. Mm-hmm. So from that Quonset Hut on Woodfield Road, they purchased a property from the American Legion, where Baby Hank is now, where the Hank Early Childhood Center on the corner of Hempstead Avenue and Wood Lawn, and that property, the Early Childhood Center, was their second location. So they built that in 1961.
What's the weirdest thing that you found out about this town?
I did a story on equestrian history in West Hempstead, and that in and of itself is an interesting story. But there was a fellow, so he was in the Army in World War I. And he was in the cavalry. His name was Leonhard. And this fellow Leonhard, he was a captain. He obtained the rank of captain in the cavalry in World War I. And so after World War I, the army establishment started saying that cavalry was really outmoted, and Now this is a time when the army started developing tanks and very advanced artillery and that sort of thing. And what use do we have for people riding around on horses? So they were trying to phase out the cavalry in the army. And this Leonhard was of the opinion that was foolhardy, because he thought that there was still a serious use for cavalry in the army, and in 1929 he set out to prove it. He said, "I'm going to ride my army mare." He had an army mare on his property. The name was Black Bess. He called it Black Bess. Yeah, I'm gonna ride Black Bess across country, and on a sunny winter day in 1929, he left the Malvern train station by horse and rode cross country, and almost made it. He basically, after two three weeks in the saddle, he was cantering through the Arizona desert near Yuma, Arizona, and Black Bess actually got bitten by a huge rattlesnake. And, after that, it basically healed over and died from that bite. But that was a weird you know, story to come across. So he had some very interesting characters that were around back then.
And he lives here in West Hempstead.
He lives in West Hempstead, yeah.
Does being a rabbi make you more attentive to history?
I think so. I mean, I do borrow a lot from, you know, my experience as a rabbi. I try to, you know, pay attention to, you know, history really is a teacher, you know, to try and inform them. I'll just give you one small little tidbit. When I was talking about, you know, counterfactual history, just one small example that one of the South Side Railroad that was built in West Hempstead. That railroad didn't really last very long. There was a terrible accident that occurred in 1875, right by the where the Western Beef property is. You know, that parking lot. There was a culvert that or a little rivulet that ran through that property at the time. And in 1875, in February, I believe 3rd it was, the rivulet, there was a terrible rainstorm for a couple days. And the rivulet overflowed, and it undermined the tracks of that railroad. And when the railroad operators tried to test the the track by running a train over it, it basically the bridge caved, and five people were killed in that disaster. And that basically that was one of the things that kind of like sealed the fate of the South Side Railroad. By 1879, the South Side Railroad was out, and for a very long time, the residents of West Hempstead had thought that okay, you know, and we still have the lines in place. Maybe a new company is going to come in and, you know, take it over and rebuild it. And our community will grow, you know, in the way that it was supposed to. But in fact, what happened was there was a fellow, his name was Henry Hilton, who was the president of the Garden City Company. And he took over. Henry Hilton was a judge who actually inherited the property of the original founder of Garden City. His name was A.T. Stewart. A.T. Stewart, by the time that he died, was the third wealthiest American. And he died childless and left all of his entire estate to Henry Hilton, who was his business associate. Henry Hilton, basically, so getting back to the South Side Railroad, when the South Side Railroad went under, all of its assets went up for auction. The person who purchased that line was Henry Hilton, but his intention was not to rehabilitate the line. His sole intention was to see that Garden City would grow in the way that it would, and that the surrounding areas around Garden City would remain rural as possible. So basically, he purchased the line of the South Side Railroad, and just basically let it rot. He didn't do anything with it.
He bought it to kill it.
He bought it to kill it, exactly.
That's not the same. It's not the same Hilton family from the hotels, is it?
It's not the same Hilton family of the hotels. He did own a hotel that he inherited from A.T. Stewart. Actually, a couple of hotels. One of which was a hotel called the Grand Union in Saratoga, and very infamously, Henry Hilton was one of the worst anti-Semites to have ever existed in American history. So he started a group called the Society for the Suppression of Jews.
Wow.
In the 1870s. Yeah, and at the first meeting of the Society of Suppression of Jews, he got up and announced, he said, if this is a free country, why can't this country be free of Jews? That was his pronouncement at this meeting. In any event, there was a famous Jewish financier. He was a German immigrant named Joseph Seligman. He was very wealthy. He was nominated to Secretary of Treasury by President Grant. He declined it. He turned it down, but gives you an idea of how prominent he was. He took his family in 1879 up to the Grand Union Hotel in Saratoga, and Henry Hilton, as the owner, turned him away. He said, you're not welcome here. You're a Jew. Get out of here. That's a little bit crazy. Yeah. So what's interesting is, and just the kind of to end off that story, is that by the 1890s, Henry Hilton ran, he basically, he was a terrible businessman. So that huge, enormous wealth that he inherited from A.T. Stewart basically was squandered to the point where he had to liquidate in the 1890s. And the person that was responsible for liquidating his estate was none other than Henry Morgenthau, who was the grandfather of he's the father of Henry Morgenthau Jr., who was who was in FDR's cabinet.
He was the Treasury Secretary.
The Treasury Secretary in FDR's cabinet. He was the father of
Robert Morgenthau.
Robert Morgenthau, who was the Manhattan DA for many, many years, you know, even until, I think, about 10 years ago, or maybe 8, 9 years ago when he retired. The Morgenthau family is Jewish. So
of course.
Henry Morgenthau, the grandfather, was appointed. He was appointed the trustee to liquidate Hilton's estate. And he writes about the irony that existed as a Jew responsible for liquidating this estate. Kind of like a very ironic end off to that story.
Interesting. So they say that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. So for us in West Hempstead, if we forget our history, what are we going to repeat?
It's been generally a very patriotic community. That in World War II, there was a very big effort and push to sell war bonds to help the war effort in World War II. And Hempstead had its own, effort to establish a war bond drive. But because of, the enthusiasm of West Hempstead, so they started their own war bond drive, and they exceeded expectations of the drive, I would say, fourfold or fivefold. They actually had, rather than one drive, they ended up having, doing four drives where they exceeded their goals. And each time they put up this thermometer, along Hempstead Avenue to show their, the progress as they were selling these war bonds. And each time the thermometer blew a stop, they exceeded their goals. To the extent that Boeing, if you go, if you were in Seattle and went to the, Boeing, aircraft manufacturing plant, so they minted a B-17 Fortress, and they put on, and we have a picture of it, they put on the side of the plane, Spirit of West Hempstead. Those planes cost $300,000 each at the time, I guess, which is a pretty hefty sum at the time. And, the funds for that plane were raised exclusively from residents of West Hempstead. And so that's, an example of the patriotism that existed at the time. So, I think that, for people that appreciate history, it's important to keep that in perspective and to try to perpetuate that that sort of patriotism and also that sort of, camaraderie and friendship among neighbors into the future.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Yossi Azos, for those great comments. Really appreciate
You're
this perspective,
welcome.
And we'd love to have you back again in the future.